So would you introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, I'm Jordan.
I'm Ian.
I'm Brent.
And you're in a band?
Sort of. You can call it that, I guess.
What's it called, if I were going to call it something?
Yeah, probably a band.
What's it called?
Howler.
People are having so much fun with this band, figuring out whether you really did play at the farmer's market, figuring out whether you really did meet in front of Planned Parenthood. You know what? I don't really care. What I care about is when you formed this band, and I know you were in a zillion bands before, including one that people keep repeating the same name of again and again and again. So what? When you sat down to form this band, what did you really have in mind? Or did you have anything in mind?
Yeah, it was, for me, it kind of started as a basement project. And I wanted it to be, in the very beginning, I wanted it to be just kind of about me and my basement and not really worrying about what my friends thought about my music, what my other musicians about Minneapolis thought about my music. I just wanted to make what I wanted to make. And I just kind of planted myself in that basement and just did what I wanted. For once, kind of.
And so from there, basement project, at what moment do you say, this basement project actually might make it to the next level?
Yeah, after I'd completed a demo by myself, it kind of tickled me. I was actually really interested in the sounds I had made with it. And I kind of believed in it. So I just basically was printing out tons and tons of demos and just handed them to my friends, handed them to everyone, would listen to it. And I gave it to these guys as well, and they got into it, and they joined up with me eventually.
So how did he approach you to join up with him? Did he say, okay, this really is that good, and if you don't join up with me, I'll kill you?
I think for me it was more of a, they were going on tour, and their other guitarist couldn't make it for some reason.
So you were the faux guitarist.
Yeah, but I think, worked out so well. I think they were leaning on getting rid of him anyways, or trying to. But yeah, they just kind of approached me, do you want to go on this tour with us for a week? I was like, yeah, why not? And then ever since then, I've just been in the band, so.
For me, it was, Jordan actually was looking for drummers for a long time, and finally settled on the worst drummer in Minneapolis. I was like, Brent, I would love to have you attempt to play drums with this project. I said, yeah, all right.
Good to be the worst drummer, because then you won't combust like in Spinal Tap. Only the good drummers combust. But interesting for me, it was the 34th anniversary of my college radio station in Albany, New York, and I didn't go, but I'm listening. And one of the college DJs played Back of My Neck. I didn't know that's what it was. I just heard it. And then I immediately, of course, it took 15 seconds for me to call your label who sent it to me. But that's how I discovered it. I didn't discover it because I knew a thing about the band. I heard one song. So I heard it purely based on, it was something I really liked. It was the ultimate punk pop song. And I'm not using punk or pop as a genre. I'm just saying that it worked immediately. And then seconds later, I'm listening to Triple J in Australia. And boom, it's on there. And I'm like, but it's not on in the US yet. And then I grabbed it and started playing multiple tracks off the record and, voila. What's your game as far as your understanding that, yeah, okay, the UK, it's heating up and the NME is talking about you and, and blah, 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 and we'll get to that. But what about here? What about in your home base?
That's a good question. I think that's kind of what we're doing right now. I think a lot of bands that get, or find a lot of success overseas kind of forget about their home country. They get really excited about, going over there and spending as much time over there as possible. I think what we find important is you have to build it here. So still, don't forget about America, continue to tour it and just, build support. The 30 people that show up to that show are still fans and they want to see you. Sometimes there's about 30 people at the shows. There's people that want to hear it. So
isn't perception reality a great thing, though? Because you see, it's going to work over here, but it's a different game over here. It's going to take another month or two till Back of My Neck is in heavy rotation on K-Rock in L.A., but when you sign a 4-album deal with a, quote, cool indie label, do you still get to keep your publishing and keep your heart and soul?
Yes.
So when you are signing a 4-album deal and you get to that moment where you're about to do it, how do you turn to them when you're, 20 years old and you say, wow, Rough Trade, one of the coolest labels, is offering me a 4-album deal? In your back of your head, you're like, okay, Yeah, we've got our bravado. We'll provide those four albums, and we'll do something different every album, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's all great when you're signing. But how do you turn to them and say, okay, that's great, but I'm not giving certain things up?
Well, they don't really ask you to give certain things up, though, which is kind of the beauty of it, I think, and why I'm kind of, I feel lucky to be signed to such like a good independent label. It's definitely an artist label. I think Jeff Travis is kind of said to us before, I think the artist is always right. He's like, I might not always agree with you, but you're always right, no matter what. And he will listen to you. My idea, I could come up with the stupidest idea ever, and he would probably back it, just because he believes that much in the artist. So we don't have any problems with that, I don't think.
12 shows, I believe, at South by Southwest, because I couldn't get anywhere near you there, which is fine, because this is just so much more sexy to be hanging out in the van on Lombard Street, you know. But 12 shows, and we were teasing before the interview about, you know, striking a pose at the appropriate hipsters and all of that. But I want them to go first. Tell me a little bit about, that was obviously the first South by Southwest, because the band is that new, right? So give me a moment of what did, in all that insanity of 2,000 bands and 10,000 people and then 1,000 unofficial bands playing on giant tacos, what was it? Did you see the Dorito stage? That was really something else. The world really needs giant Dorito bag. So what was, give me a couple of moments from what that was like, because were you ready to experience that insanity?
I don't think there's any way to get ready for such an experience.
Yeah, it was intense and it was fun and we all almost died, it felt like. I saw 30 crust punks, do you know what those are?
Mm-hmm. Dogs and all?
Dogs and all, sitting in a circle on 6th Street, just playing. All of them had washboards and they're all playing washboards together. It sounded terrible, but I think that was, I don't know if you asked for a memorable moment, but that was my memorable moment.
Okay, other than the fact that seriously, you I could feel in your stage demeanor certain things, not good or bad, but just you were very realistic about what you were getting into, right?
I think so.
And what were you getting into?
Playing a show in front of a full room, and not everyone knows who you are, and they're all judging you. You just kind of have to, you know, say, well, screw it, and just play how you'd normally play, and don't let that get in the way. Even though they're all doing this with their mustaches and their cool poses and their crossed arms and their flannel, don't be intimidated, just do it.
I love this quote. Our management advised us that we aren't allowed to take any time off this year. Okay. And so I went and looked, and you're booked straight through August, nonstop. By the time August comes, will you still be playing Back of Your Neck with energy and aliveness? Or will you change it into a disco tune?
Disco for sure. No, actually.
A disco remix.
No, we got a couple more years until the disco remix. You know, probably yes. I'm already sick of the album. I mean, I'm sick of all the songs. But it's a different story when you're playing it live, just because it's all muscle memory. You don't have to think about what you're doing anymore. So it's just you have fun with it. You just don't really think about it and just mess around, feed off the crowd. So it won't be a problem, I don't think.
You're not much, I say this, I'm just doing this to get a rise. You're not much on the Minneapolis music scene in the 2000s. It's not about the Minneapolis music scene in the 2000s versus the Minneapolis music scene in the 80s. It's more about the music scene in general and bands that are actually trying to represent something. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but bands that are really trying to have a point of view versus bands that are just trying to get the bloggers to write about them nicely.
Yes, I think that's very important. the blog age is kind of like a double-edged sword. It's cool because a lot of bands can be picked up that probably wouldn't have been picked up in the first place. But I think the problem I have is it's almost kind of created these genres out of it, where, you know, to be a successful band, to be like on a, you know, certain blogs or whatever, you have to have that sort of blog sound, which is interesting. So I think they kind of like shape the way a lot of bands are sounding in the end. So
I love going to the end first. I had this way down here, but I'm going to segue to this. I'm very proud of you. You got a 6.0 in Pitchfork. And I'm happy. America Give Up is inconsistent and derivative yet promising. I'm doing this in my full announcer voice. And yet not nearly impressive as some early adopters would have you believe. A pretty typical first album. Nothing wrong with that. But, I mean, that's not, to me, the critic's job. You know, the critic's job is, sure, you want to have a personal opinion, but when you do that, you know, inconsistent and derivative. Well, this same human being probably would have listened to the Ramones and said they were inconsistent and derivative. What's a pitch? So what is a pitchfork band?
We're not
a high enough vocal, or
probably not high enough vocal. We're not chill enough. We're not using like electric drums.
You got to work on that.
Yeah, we got to work on that for sure. Which is not a bad thing. That's just sort of their taste. But
and then there's the Guardian, the oldest trick in the book, disguising narcissism as rampant nihilism. I don't think anybody who reads the Guardian even knows what those words mean. I don't think their readers know those words. So I better give them credit because you got big words. You got nihilism out of the Guardian. Woo!
That's good.
So do you pay attention to this stuff at all?
Slightly. It's not like I do not go out and out of my way to look at reviews at all or anything that's written about us. If I stumble across it, I'll read it. But yeah, I generally try to stay away from it.
It's a well-produced record. It's a good-sounding record. It doesn't sound like, and I know there was an EP before this, but it doesn't sound like a record that was just kind of slapped together. So tell me about that. How did you come upon producer, all of that stuff? Did you sign with label and they said, here, have this?
It was a really, really weird record to make. So we had done the EP. We did it with the same people that did the EP. And I think we started out and we actually recorded the full thing completely differently and actually hated it. And started from scratch. We're like, it's too clean. So I think the second time we went at it, we wanted to be kind of Mary Chan about it. We wanted to just kind of do everything wrong. I mean, you know, EQ it correctly, do everything right, but we wanted to, you know, really just
make it a little sloppy.
Exactly.
A little human.
Exactly. It was just the imperfections to show. So.
And did it work?
I think so. It's like lo-fi, but in a weird way.
Tour manager and the merch person and all that stuff, right? So where's that moment between that you realize, uh-oh, we can't be quite that, we can keep our aesthetic, but we still don't want to be DIY because we want to concentrate on what we're supposed to concentrate on.
I don't think we've ever really wanted to be DIY, though, in all honesty. we're not Fugazi by any means. And honestly, there's a lot to do. There's a lot to keep straight. The people that are there to help us out, you know, are very important, and we like to keep them around. We want to do what we want to do. We want to write music. We want to play shows. We don't want to deal around, you know, mess around with the other bullshit. So
that's all we can handle. You're 20, 22, and we can't do much more.
What we're making fun of here? The people with the crossed hands, the wanting to be, you know, they want to make you the next big thing, even more theoretically. Then you want to be the next big thing because then that's going to make them seem like they're super cool. So how do you get around that at all, or do you just keep doing what you're doing and just kind of throw the ball down the alley and say whatever?
I think we just say whatever because we've gotten as far as we are by not really thinking about that sort of thing extensively and not really worrying about that sort of thing at all. So I think we've done something right thus far.
Well, yeah, the music, for starters.
Exactly. But that's what I mean. That's all we have to worry about, really. So we just tend to not think about that sort of thing and just kind of continue on and do what we do best. And I think the rest will follow.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich. And it's two of your songs as the bread and songs by anybody else you want to play in between.